Davidson. I like this Davidson.
It's the Bottom Line Podcast.
With your host,
Davidson Baker.
And we are live. It's episode 41 of the Bottom Line Podcast, back just a day after episode 40. And it's part one of a doubleheader I have today. Episode 41 is the 17th MMA kind of tailored edition, and I'm joined all the way from Burlington, Vermont by my colleague and friend over at the MMATakeover.com. My good man Jordan Carroll, rocking the fantasy football. Looks like a Patriots jersey, if I'm not mistaken, oh, yeah. But something to represent the colors.
Oh, yeah. New England, man. Born and raised. I never had a choice.
And they looked pretty good yesterday. I thought they shut down Deshaun Watson effectively, and that was to my detriment because Deshaun Watson was my starting quarterback this week.
Yeah, I was surprised with the defense. Offensively, they were pretty sloppy, actually. They made a lot of mistakes. They came close to turning the ball over. They fumbled a couple of times. Luckily, they were able to recover, but defensively, I was blown away. I thought they looked fantastic, better than they have in years.
I thought they looked better than a lot of people did expect. And you know, while this isn't a fantasy football Taylor type podcast, you and I both can appreciate and love the American, not so much a pastime. Baseball is the pastime, but we all know that football is America's game, and that's something that you and I might have to get on and talk about later too. Who you got anybody? You play fantasy, right?
Oh yeah.
You got anybody going tonight, or anybody going against you tonight?
I think all I have. I'm in two leagues. And I have the Rams defense tonight. But in that league, I'm already like 30 points up. So.
Before we dive into UFC 228, I'm gonna ask you I'm in two leagues as well. I think I've got the win in both, but it's like, no. So in one league, I'm up by 30. I'm done, but he's got Todd Gurley PPR up 30 though.
Todd Gurley's capable though.
I know.
I mean, he goes for 130 yards, a couple of touchdowns, and five or six catches. That's all it takes. I picked up John Connor last week, and I started him in my swing spot, and I got, 35 points, I think.
Wow.
From him. Wow. So, yeah, Gurley's capable of it, but I don't know.
And
he's been inconsistent.
Yeah, he has, for a fact. And then in my other league, I'm up 10. I have Golden Tate, and he has Amari Cooper.
I like your chances there.
I think I'm sitting solid in both, to be honest with you. I mean, definitely. 30 is a lot to ask still from Gurley, so.
Yeah, and who knows with the Raiders, man. I mean, they kind of had that that flash in the pan year, you know, what was it, 2016?
Yeah.
And then last year, they just tanked. Cooper was awful. Derek Carr was mediocre. I mean, the Raiders really regressed last year. So
yeah, I thought the offensive line was a little bit to blame for most of those problems. And you know, there's a lot of moving parts to football, as there is to mixed martial arts as well. And we'll get right into the good stuff. And UFC 228 took place live from American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas, and none other than in the main event. We had another, and it seems to me like this is almost becoming a trend, but once again, a champion holds serve as a slight betting underdog, and Tyron Woodley is and still 4 minutes, 19 seconds into round two with the Darce. What did you think of his performance?
I thought he looked absolutely fantastic. I definitely thought, you know, I didn't see Till winning that fight. I really didn't. If I'm being completely honest, I think Till was maybe getting a little more hype than he should have coming in. I don't think he beat Wonderboy. I scored that fight for Wonderboy.
I did too.
And other than that, his only relevant win really is – or win over a relevant opponent, excuse me, is we'll say slightly past his prime, Cowboy Cerrone, you know. So It reminded me a lot, I'll say, of Stipe Miocic and Francis Ngannou. It just, it screamed too much too soon for Till. I think he's loaded with potential, but Woodley's, that guy is scary.
for Woodley to secure a Darce, too, on a guy that's taller than him and a guy that's longer with him, people really do not understand exactly how difficult that is, because Darce chokes are pulled off by guys that have the advantage in reach, and they're pulled off by guys that can use their long arms to get the proper type of clip and sink in that type of choke. And for him to do it on a guy that is so much bigger than him is so impressive. I thought he was going to go for one of those signature arm and triangles that he would pull towards the more of the beginning of the career. But I mean, even when you don't look at the grappling exchanges, I thought Till was being patient in round one, and understandably so. His cardio probably doesn't hold a T to what Woodley's does, if we're being honest. But he was still very hesitant in that opening minute of round two and waited a little bit too long, and Woodley caught him.
Yeah, it almost seemed like he had too much respect for Woodley's power, as ridiculous as that is, because, I mean, Tyron Woodley, if he lands clean, he'll knock you dead. I mean, that guy just explodes. But he just – it seemed like Till was he seemed nervous. You know what I mean? He seemed like he really – he didn't want to sort of get into that range, into the pocket with Woodley. And as a striker, you don't really have a choice if you're going to mount some offense, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I thought that was exactly what the case was. And it was a cool thing to see. It was a cool thing to see Woodley kind of go up to him. I saw the clip where Woodley went up to him afterwards and was telling him about, you know, how he mentioned the Nate Marquardt loss in his career, and how, you know, he was 10-0 and he got that title shot. You know, a lot of respect between these two guys. But I must say, while I was kind of not per se rooting for Darren Till, I thought it would have been a cool thing to see him win the title, but I'm very happy for Tyron. But I think where the fans win the most, particularly me, depending on how you like or look at Colby Covington, is that we're going to get to see that fight. And that's something that I think may have never materialized if Till would have walked out with the belt.
Yeah, I completely agree. To be honest with you, I don't see where Covington wins that fight.
Me neither. I don't.
You know, I think Woodley's, you know, maybe the better striker, definitely the more powerful puncher. The wrestling is comparable. The cardio is comparable. And it just, I think Woodley's a little better everywhere. But, hey, man, I'm going to tune in, you know? Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I picked RDA over Covington, too, so.
Oh, man. I can't say I was with you in the same boat right on there. That was right around right before the time I joined the team. And I was actually really pulling for Covington, to be honest with you, just because I wanted to see this fight. And I think it's a fight that is the only fight at the top of the welterweight division that makes – really all the sense in the world. And before we move on to the co-main event, and we've spoken a whole lot on Woodley, and I think my favorite part about it was the fact that Woodley got his black belt after the fight was over. But on the topic of Darren Till, was this the last time we see Darren Till at 170? Because I think it is.
I hope so, but I don't think so.
Wow, okay.
You know, it seems like he's putting too much focus and too much time into the weight. You know, he's thinking about cutting weight. He's starting his weight cuts earlier than most do. And I think that guy is loaded with potential. You know, if he could just really focus on getting better, you know, and not having to worry so much about the weight, I think it would do wonders for him. And I don't think he would be undersized at 185. With that being said, he was very non committal. He was asked about that a couple of times, actually, during the post-fight press conference, and he did not seem very big on the idea of moving up. So if it's up to him, I don't think he goes up, no.
I think, I really think that he should move up. I think, like you said, he's not an undersized 185er, and there are a lot of really juicy matchups for Till at middleweight. And
oh yeah,
I think that would be something that a lot of people would like to see. I think that's something the UFC would like to kind of experience with. But nonetheless, Tyron Woodley is Ann Still for his third official UFC welterweight title defense. Moving on to the co-main event. Jeez, bro. I mean, oh my God. Like, I'm watching this, and she's over Jessica Andrade. I mean, but if anyone is living under a rock and is listening to this podcast, knowing what you're going to get out of it, and is not aware of the absolutely colossal right hand Jessica Andrade laid Karolina Kovalkiewicz out with a little under 2 minutes into the opening round, I mean, you gotta go watch it, bro. It was spectacular.
I've never seen anything like that. That was incredible. You know, for a what is she, 5'1"? Probably walks around at right around 135, 140.
Yeah, I'd say so.
To generate that kind of power, you know. I mean, she's a strong girl for her size. You know, she has powerful wrestling. She hits hard, but that kind of power at strawweight is just not something that you see. That was just, I'm still blown away. I mean, it's been 2 days and I'm still not completely out of shock, you know?
No, dude, me neither. And you know, me and my girlfriend are sitting in the living room watching this as it unfolds, and she's a huge Joanna Jacek fan. And so, you know, whenever the strawweights do make their way to the octagon, she kind of takes what's happening with a little bit more invested interest, because she likes the UFC, but obviously, you know, she's nothing like myself, and understandably so. But when the strawweights do begin to fight, she does take a little more invested interest. And even when that punch landed, she was like, like it was so incredible. And, you know, it ended up being a $50,000 punch, you know, the one that got her the post-fight bonus. And especially, and we'll get to Tatiana Suarez shortly. I think a lot of people, including myself, have Tatiana Suarez donned as a future this and future that. But with Jessica Andrade sitting pretty in the position she is right now at number two, and how well she performed against Kovalkiewicz, you've got to think there is nobody else that's up for Rose next other than her.
Oh, no, no. To be honest with you, I think you could have given her the title shot before that fight.
Yeah, I agree.
Andrade is a problem. She is a huge problem for Rose Namajunas and everybody else in that weight class. She's, you know, if I'm, for example, if I'm Tatiana Suarez, if I'm her manager, I'm staying the hell away from Jessica Andrade as long as I can.
Yeah.
She's a huge, huge problem in that weight class.
Yeah, and I think she's a bad matchup for Rose. The blueprint to be here kind of might be held in Joanna's hands just because of how smart a fight Joanna put with her. And, you know, when I was watching film on Kovalkiewicz, I always think that Kovalkiewicz and Joanna have a lot of gleaming similarities outside of how maybe more aggressive Joanna is to push the action and how content Kovalkiewicz is to kind of sit back and point fight. But with the way that they do kind of strike and keep their distance, I think they're really similar. But obviously, you know, Andrade was the bull, and Kovalkiewicz was the little red napkin this weekend. And man, it was really, oof. I mean, Kovalkiewicz was super emotional about it, and it was a pretty brutal KO.
Yeah, it was tough to watch, you know. I'm not particularly a fan of Karolina's. I don't dislike her, you know. I'm sort of indifferent as far as her style and watching her fight. But you've gotta feel for her. I mean, yeah. That was violent. You know, that was, you know what that reminded me of? Is that reminded me of mid-2000s, like, Vanderlei Silva. I mean, Andrade just came out and just overwhelmed her from the opening seconds. I mean, she came forward and she tagged her and hurt her, God, 7 or 8 seconds into the fight.
Yep.
And that was the story of the next 90 seconds until the punch heard around the world.
Man, I mean, and I really think that Andrade is going to be next for Rose. Whether Rose will be ready to defend her belt by the end of the year is obviously something only her and her team know and everybody else doesn't, but that's a fight that I would like to see materialize before the year is out. Moving on, have you ever seen anything like Zabit Magomed Sharipov, man?
He's a talented guy, man. He is. To answer your question, John Jones, maybe Aaron Pico.
Oh, you're that high on Aaron Pico?
I really am. I really, really like Aaron Pico, and I love the fact that he got his first loss out of the way as early as he did.
Yeah, I think that's an underrated quality in an early – not a quality, but maybe an underrated asterisk that can go by someone's early career with as much hype and someone as well-rounded as Aaron Pico. And, man, he's got a tough test coming up at the end of this month that I think he should probably pass with flying colors. But speaking on the topic of Zabit, he was supposed to have the same kind of – relative test come to fruition this weekend. Obviously, without the Yair Rodriguez matchup, Brandon Davis steps up and he gets banana split knee barred. I mean, what is there's nothing this guy cannot do, and that's the scariest form of opposition in the octagon for me is when you're going up against a guy that not only is there nothing he cannot do, but there's nothing he cannot do exceptionally well.
Oh, my God. He's so well-rounded. He's looked so dominant so far. It's time. You've got to test that guy. I think all of the, you know, the building and sort of trying to introduce him to as many fans as you can and putting him on big cards, and they've sort of taken that approach with him. He called out Chad Mendez after his win over Brandon Davis, and I love that fight. I absolutely love that fight because if he beats Chad Mendez, he's that guy. But that beating Chad Mendez is no easy task. So,
yeah,
I love that matchup personally.
There are a lot of juicy matchups for Zabit at 145. Because, you know, to be honest with you, I wouldn't be against seeing him in the Yair. I obviously would like to see that come to fruition. However, I'm looking at the featherweight rankings, and, man, there are a lot of really tantalizing matchups there for him. How about a fight between, you know, maybe like him and Darren Elkins? Are you out of your mind? That would be an unreal fight.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing. Yeah, that would, you know, and he showed that he's willing to, sort of throw caution to the wind a little bit in his fight.
Okay.
Yeah. That fight was insane. I mean, it was just back and forth. It was crazy.
I don't think the featherweights are going to tag him like that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I guess my point is I would love to see him fight Darren Elkins. I think that would play out similarly to the Bochniak fight, but it would do a lot more for Zabit than beating Bochniak did.
That'd be such an awesome fight. I'm really high on that matchup. Moving on, and nothing really a lot to say about this one other than Jimmy Rivera improves to 6-1 in the UFC and kind of point fights his way to a victory over Dodson. I think that there's no really other way to fight John Dodson intelligently really at all. And maybe the boos towards round three I kind of get, but I thought the boo birds came out really early in this one. I didn't think that it deserved to be booed as early as it was.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the fight, to be honest with you. It wasn't a snoozer. I mean, it was, you know, probably the least exciting fight on the entire card.
But that's not saying much. This card was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, this has got to be the card of the year so far. You know, every play. I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you what is it? This one or Lincoln? Lincoln was really, really sweet too.
Lincoln was good. 228 gets my vote, man.
Wow.
It was just top to bottom. I mean, that Rivera-Dodson fight, if that's your worst fight on the card, enjoyed that fight.
Yeah. No, I agree. And moving on to round out the main card, someone has got to tell their fighter if they are matched up with Abdulrazak Alhassan in the future, don't stand in front of that guy because he is going to put your lights out.
Oh, my God. He's terrifying. You know what I want to see is I want to see Alhassan and Matt Brown. I don't think it makes sense rankings wise. I just don't care. Can you imagine that fight?
I like that matchup. You're kind of right. I don't think it makes particular sense, but I mean, who cares? That would be an all violence matchup for real. As far as how long Brown would be able to withstand, because you know he's going to try to stand and trade with him.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I don't know how well that works out in his benefit, though. Really, anybody in that welterweight division, I don't know how well standing with him works out for any of them.
He's just – he's got that special power. You know, there are a ton of people in this sport that can finish fights with their hands. There are only a select handful that have that kind of – consistently one clean shot and you're done, period. And Alhassan is one of them. I'm really, really growing to like that guy, and I want to see him fight somebody relevant sooner, not getting any younger. I think he's 33, I believe. So, you know, I know he's only on a two fight or three fight winning streak. And wins over
he beat Sabah Hamasi twice.
Yep. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. Yeah, he beat Sabah Hamasi twice, and he beat Charlie Ward, and lost a very close split decision to Omari Akhmedov, who's obviously now up in the middleweight division. Here's this for matchmaking. I matchmake like every week, no matter whether I do the Who's Next article or not. I think it's a fun time. And how about this fight? I like Abdulrazak Alhassan against the Eliseu Zaleski dos Santos Belal Muhammad winner.
That probably makes a lot more sense rankings-wise. I'm sorry?
Zaleski's ranked now. He's ranked 15th. They just bumped him up.
Really? He's in the top 15 now?
Yeah, he like moved. You know those random times where like you'll get random guys that like move into the like number 15 after being not ranked? Yeah, I saw that last week. Wow. He's number 15.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I don't know. I mean, I may be a bit prisoner of the moment, but I like Alhassan against either one of those guys, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think that'd be a fun fight across the board. And back to the strawweight division, Tatiana Suarez holding serve as one of the biggest favorites on the card at minus 475, and she gets Carla Sparza out of there with some brutal ground and pound in round three. Is she the female Khabib, or is she the female Khabib?
Oh, my God. That was incredible, and I mean, Carla, she's one of the best wrestlers in that division. And she had no answer, you know? She just had nothing. That was an absolute statement. What do you think is next for Suarez? Does she wait for a title shot now?
Dude, I think the only fight that makes sense for that top half of that ranking of those particular weight class rankings, if you don't give Joanna Shevchenko, I don't think there's another fight to make other than Joanna versus Suarez, and I think that's a fantastic matchup.
Oh man, yeah. Stylistically, that is a fantastic matchup. If you're the UFC, do you risk what you might have in Tatiana Suarez? Because Joanna Jędrzejczyk has not had any trouble stifling wrestlers.
Yeah, no, not at all. But at the same time, there has not been any wrestler or any fighter in that weight class with a wrestling base that is as dominant as her. I mean, and I think I heard Luke Thomas say it one time, and I think he was dead right. With the evolution of women's MMA kind of becoming what it has become, and I think that you and I can probably agree, where the strawweight division is right now, there's not been a women's weight class more stacked than what the strawweight division is right now. Can you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It isn't close.
And with that being said, there comes a time where some individual girls will come into these weight classes and they will take it by storm, all based on their one specific attribute that they are excellent at compared to everybody else. Ronda Rousey was that way for a while with her judo ability. Joanna was that way with how just effective she used her Muay Thai and striking. And I think Suarez is the same way with how good she can grapple. I don't think it's a matter of if, I think it's a matter of when she gets her hands on that belt. To be honest with you, I am insurmountably high on her.
She's looked fantastic. I mean, she's been, can you imagine Tatiana Suarez versus Jessica Andrade for the belt?
Good.
Five rounder.
Good.
Oh man. That would be a great fight.
It's a matchup that I think favors Andrade, man. I think Andrade would be so low to the ground and has such a low base that, like, are you really going to be able to use your wrestling to a T like you did against Esparza? Because Suarez just took her down whenever she wanted. Are you going to be able to do that against an Andrade? I'm not really convinced.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it, and there's no question about it, especially after this weekend. Jessica Andrade is better on the feet. You know, she's better than Suarez, and she's better than Esparza, who wasn't really able to give Suarez any trouble on the feet. But if Andrade can stuff those shots and use that overwhelming, aggressive, walk you down striking that she does, man, that's an interesting matchup.
I agree. And another interesting matchup that took place that I switched my pick on this one like three times, but Aljamain Sterling ultimately makes me look good and gets the victory over Cody Stamann by brutal, what do you want to call it? Like purposeful dislocation of left knee via knee bar. I mean, he kind of took his hands and wrapped them around Stamann's ankles and kind of did the damage himself. Ooh, it was tough to watch.
Yeah, that was tough to watch. Yeah, he's in, I think, Aljamain Sterling, he put himself in that category with the Frank Mirs and the Shinya Aokis with that one.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think that's a fantastic way to compare how that submission ruled out too. And now Sterling 8-3 in the UFC. I think him and Rivera makes more sense now than it ever has.
Really? Aljamain Sterling and Jimmy Rivera?
Yeah.
Really? I like Rivera Cruz, actually.
I like that fight.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said I like that fight too.
Yeah, that I would be really curious to see how that plays out. You know, Rivera tends to sort of methodically move forward, attacks with a lot of leg kicks, you know, definitely has some power in his hands. But would Cruz be able to dance circles around him like he has so many other people?
Yeah, I'm so ready for Dominic Cruz to come back to the Octagon, man, to be honest with you. I think there's a lot of good matchups for him at 135. And 135 is the weight class I've been saying for weeks now, I think 135, especially with how loaded it is, towards maybe not so the bottom of the ladder, but towards where we have new up-and-comers, like guys like Petr Yan, who we will talk about before this episode is up, guys like Sean O'Malley, guys like Manny Bermudez, guys like Ricky Simone. This class has a lot to like as far as future up-and-comers are concerned. And there's a lot of juicy matchups all over the place. Moving on at welterweight, Fortis MMA almost went clear across the board, but man, the most impressive kind of alpha-bell performance might have been from Jeff Hands of Steel Neal with an absolutely blistering high kick KO of Frank Camacho.
Oh, that was just, oh my God, that was violent. That was absolutely violent. That was just, sorry for the record. Sorry for the background noise. My dog is sick. My dog's sick. He's, you know, so he's sort of gagging and coughing and stuff like that.
I'm gonna hear that, man.
Yeah. And he just started his medication today, but it's not helping yet. But, there's no demons floating around my house, I assure you. yeah, that was incredible. That was actually the first time I've ever seen Neil fight. I had heard of him, but I had never seen him fight before. And I was blown away.
He looked fantastic with his striking, and he got Brian Camozzi out of there in round two, I believe, in his debut back in February with the submission. So I really like his prospects in the welterweight division. Especially a really stacked welterweight division. I think he has a chance to stand out. Moving on, Darren Stewart cashing in as the +165 underdog with a very resilient comeback win and an elbow behind the ear of Charles Byrd that sent him down to the canvas. I thought this was such an impressive win from Darren Stewart, especially given where Stewart was fight before last, 0-3 in four appearances in the UFC.
Yeah, I was actually really impressed because he was, I mean, not only was he losing that fight, he was losing that fight in dominant fashion. He was getting picked apart. He got hurt a couple of times. It was kind of starting to feel like it was just a matter of time until Byrd was going to put him away. And like you said, just that elbow up against the fence, and it just turned the tide like that.
Yeah, and you got to feel good for him, especially with how emotional he was after his win over Eric Spicely. And that fight was, of course, a fight that had both guys' backs against the wall, and seemingly so. Eric Spicely cut from the roster since. How about Diego Sanchez, though? And I'll kind of pair these two together. Diego Sanchez and Jim Miller winning on the same card. It's like it's 2012 again, man.
I know. That was great to see, wasn't it? For both of those guys, it's they're both sort of starting, at least for me, to cross into that category of guys that I almost don't want to watch anymore, you know, because you have a soft spot for the guys that were around sort of when you first started to maybe get into the sport or first started ordering pay-per-views or whatever it is. And Jim Miller and Diego Sanchez were two of the first guys that I really enjoyed watching, you know. And it's they've both been finished like violently on more than one occasion recently. So it was really, really cool. Like you said, it was a bit of a throwback there on the Fight Pass prelims. It was nice to see.
Yeah, it was. And the fight of the night actually took place on the Fight Pass prelims. And dude, let me just be the one to say quick, I am a constant and overly consistent basher of the women's bantamweight division, but I ate my words, man. And when Irene Aldana and Lucy Pudilova put on a show over 15 minutes, I mean, that it was a fucking tremendous fight in a division that, like I said, I really have not a whole lot of good words to say about more often than not.
Yeah, that's what everybody's saying. I actually missed that fight, and I haven't gotten a chance to watch it yet. Yeah, and that was all I was seeing. It was on Twitter, and all the guys on the team for the website were talking about it, and
I mean, it's frustrating. It's a fight I wouldn't blame you for missing, man. Like, going into it, just because, like I said, dude, that division fails to deliver any type of excitement, really, from anyone. because, I mean, A, who's going to beat Nunes? B, like, were you watching the Liverpool card? Did you see Lena Landsberg versus Gina Mazzoni?
Landsberg and Mazzoni, I believe so. I think I only watched the main card. Was that on the undercard or the main?
It was on the FS1 prelims, but, you know, nevertheless, that fight sucked. That fight was awful. To put that division into perspective, there are 17 girls currently active signed in that weight class. 15 of those 17 obviously have to be ranked. Two of them in the top 10 are pregnant or just had children, Juliana Pena and Sarah McMahon. And then Holly Holm has been the number one contender throughout her entire stint at 145.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. Women's bantamweight it's become pretty stagnant, you know, without Ronda Rousey and without Miesha Tate and Holly Holm, like you said, she's gone up to 145. And those three were sort of, they were sort of carrying that division in terms of like star power and general fan excitement. And obviously, Miesha and Ronda are done. They're not fighting anymore. And Holm's not in the weight class anymore. And like you said, I mean, who beats Amanda Nunes? Nope. I mean, you could make the Zingano rematch, I guess. I don't think Zingano beats her again.
I think Ketlin Vieira is probably head and shoulders above everybody else not named Amanda Nunes, to be honest with you. I think she's really, really good.
Yeah, she has looked good. I forgot about her.
She's supposed to fight next weekend, but now that she's out of that fight.
Yeah, that's, you know, they just, they're hurting for star power in that division, you know. And then, of course, Shevchenko is looking more and more like she's going to be the flyweight champion now, or at least fight for the belt. Amanda Nunes is really the only female bantamweight that I personally get particularly excited to watch.
Yep. And leading off the card was Jared Brooks getting a much-needed split decision win over Roberto Sanchez. So back-to-back split decisions to start the card, and then, you know, kind of the rest of the card really did deliver. And I wish I wasn't so pressed for time, but we got some Moscow picks to make. And
absolutely.
All of the odds I will be presenting to you are courtesy of betonline.ag. Let's see. Okay. So we'll start obviously at the top. It is a couple of ranked heavyweights. Number 8, Mark Hunt, taking on number 11, Alexei Oleinik. Mark Hunt currently, as it stands, sits at – oh, this didn't update in my phone. That's – devastating. Mark Hunt currently sits as the favorite at -210 and Alexei Oleinik at +180. I think that John Kavanaugh said it best. How are you going to Ezekiel choke a guy without a neck like Mark Hunt?
that's so funny. That's awesome. That's terrific. Yeah, I've got to go with Hunt. You know, Oleinik is he's interesting, you know. The Ezekiel chokes are the number of those that he's pulled off in his career is just mind blowing. Yeah. I don't think he's going to end up on his back with Mark Hunt, you know, unless he's unconscious. So
gotta
take Mark Hunt.
Super interesting fight in the co-main event. You got Jan Blachowicz, who almost had his back against the wall in the UFC up to the point where he picked up a standing bulldog choke win over Devin Clark last October. Then he takes out Jared Cannonier, and then he takes out Jimmy Manoa. Now he's the red corner fighter and has, surprisingly to me, man, even odds against welcoming back to the UFC Nikita Krylov, who has just been on a tear ever since. I mean, he picked up a big knockout win over Fabio Maldonado back in May. And I think it's going to be close, but I do like Nikita Krylov by decision.
Yeah, I like Krylov in that fight as well. I actually think he gets the finish.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Blachowicz is he's a tough guy. You know, he really is. But Nikita Krylov is – his finishing ability doesn't get the credit it deserves. He's been inconsistent, and I, you know, I get that, but the guy can he can end a fight, and he can do it quickly, you know. So for me, it's Krylov by knockout or TKO in that one.
Another heavyweight fight between two ranked guys, and Andre Arlovsky, who has come into, you know, before the Tuivasa fight, pretty much a reversal in fortune. He gets a tough test in Shamil Abdurakhimov, who is now the betting favorite. I know Arlovsky opened as the favorite, but Abdurakhimov is at -125. Picked up a KO win over Chase Sherman in his last victory. Who you got, Arlovsky or Abdurakhimov? I have the latter, Abdurakhimov by decision.
I actually, believe it or not, I like Arlovsky in that fight. A likely decision. But I think his sort of veteran savvy is gonna win him this fight. You know, I think he's seen it all. He's fought everybody. I don't think he's going to be contending for the title again before his career gets over, or career is over. But yeah, I like Arlovsky by decision, and I don't think it'll be particularly close. I think he probably wins all three rounds.
Okay, and then moving on, this is a fight I'm very glad they put as the main card curtain jerker on UFC Fight Pass. A guy that we are going to be hearing a lot more about, I promise, and you'll be able to read all about him in my segment on the MMATakeover.com this week, Octagon Jitters. A guy I'm really high on, man, making his UFC debut, Alexei Kinchenko, 18-0 overall. And not only a couple of stats I've been able to pick up on him while writing my article, he's not just 18-0 fighting bums. He's 18-0, the four-time defending welterweight champion in M1 Global, and his 18-0 record has – let me just make sure I have this exactly right. His 18-0 record, 13 of those 18 fights have been finished by way of knockout and one submission. So he's finished 14 of his 18 fights, and those 18 fights – have come against opponents who have posted a combined record of 221-80. So this isn't a guy in Kinchenko that has just been beating cans. He's been beating top-notch Russian MMA competition and doesn't have a blemish on his record to show for it. And I think he's going to get Thiago Alves out of there early.
Yeah, God, I want Alves to win, sort of going back to what we were talking about with Jim Miller and Diego Sanchez.
Yeah.
I don't see it. There's no way that I can justify picking Thiago Alves.
No.
So I would.
I don't think there's a whole lot of ways he can win the fight.
No. You know, I mean, he's always dangerous. He has good kicks. How old is Alves? He's 34?
I believe that's exactly correct. I can fact check that real quick. He is, he was born in 83. Yeah, he's 34. You got it right on the dot.
Yeah, and he's a really, really old 34. You know what I mean? God, he was... My God, man.
He challenged for the welterweight title.
Yeah, I mean, he's been around forever. He was actually one of John Fitch's only finishes in the UFC. Yep. John Fitch finished him with an upkick back in, 2006?
Yep.
You know? And based on his last fight, who was it? Millender, I believe, right? The big knee?
Millender. I mean... The UFC is doing that guy no favors by giving him Millender and Kinchenko in back-to-back fights.
Yeah, they're really not. Yeah, I've got to take Kinchenko. Fingers crossed for Alves. If he wins, I will be ecstatic just because I've always been a fan of his. But there's no way to justify picking him to win the fight.
No, I agree. And then the featured prelim will be CB Dolloway up against his third different opponent. First it was Omari Akhmedov. Then he got another M1 global champion in Artem Frolov. And now he takes on the 13-2 Khalid Mirzaliyev. I tend to think that Dolloway's chin is deteriorating and that Mirzaliyev is going to catch him and clip him in round one.
Yeah, that's pretty much to a T how I see that fight playing out. And to be honest with you, I don't know that Dolloway ever really had much of a chin.
No.
No, even in his prime, he never took the best shot.
That's a guy that Mirzaliyev is a guy that the only guy I have not gotten to for Octagon Jitters yet, just because, you know, that opponent change has happened three times and it's like, oh my God. But moving on, Petr Yan, who looked sensational, finishing Teruto Ishihara back in Singapore in June. And he gets the newcomer Jinzu Son on the wake of a removal of Douglas Da Silva de Andrade. Jinzu Son, another guy you'll read from me on Octagon Jitters, but a guy that literally I found almost nothing on as far as tape is concerned. I literally found almost zero.
Wow. Yeah, I, to be completely honest with you, Jinzu Son, I don't know anything about the guy.
I couldn't find any film on him anywhere.
No, I don't even know that the guy has a Wikipedia page.
He trains at Korean Zombies Gym.
Okay.
That's all I know about him, man, to be honest with you. That and he's 9-2 and making his debut, and he's a big underdog and should be against a guy with the power of Petr Yan.
Yeah, I'm half tempted to pick Su Son in that fight because you've seen this kind of thing before, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think the wheels are turning a little bit on what you're saying.
Yeah, it seems like almost every time that the MMA community sort of comes to a consensus opinion about something, it goes the other way. You know, yeah. Derek Lewis versus Francis Ngannou is going to be the most violent knockout in MMA history, right? Wow. You know, with that being said, I'm going to go with Yan.
There you go. And then Cajun Johnson has basically already said, he said to James Lynch, he believes that his back against the wall in this fight against Rustam Khabilov, and I don't think there's a way that he wins that fight.
Oh, I love Rustam Khabilov. I don't know why he's not more highly touted than he is. I believe he only has 2 losses in the UFC. I remember he lost to Ben Henderson. What's his other? I know he has 1 other loss, and other than that, I believe he's undefeated in the UFC. Yeah, he lost a split decision to Adriano Martins. Other than that, I mean, he's won 8, so he's 8-2. He's on a 5-fight win streak. He's a bit of a decision machine, but I like Khabilov. One-sided decision, probably a 10-8 round or two in there.
I see the same thing happening as well. You see anything other than Mirbek Taisumov round 1 KO over Desmond Green?
Wasn't there some sort of legal issue with him?
Yeah. Everything I've been led to believe, though, is that this fight's still happening. Surprisingly enough, I thought there was no way it could, but I think the fight is still on.
Wow. Okay, I didn't see any news that it got pulled from the card. I guess the Desmond Green situation was not looking so hot for him.
No. I like Taisumov early KO.
If Desmond Green is focused, I could see him pulling out a close decision. With that being said, I don't know how he could possibly be focused exclusively on this fight right now.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, so I'll go with, I guess I'll go with Taisumov, probably a late TKO or a decision. Desmond Green's a pretty tough guy, so.
Yep. A couple of light heavyweights who didn't get lucky in their UFC debuts, especially Magomed Ankalaev, who was dominating Paul Craig up until Paul Craig threw a Hail Mary triangle. And then Marcin Prakniaw, who I made, you know, why are you putting your hands down and walking straight at Sam Alvey? I really don't know. Probably had to shake some cobwebs a little bit, but I think Ankalaev, despite his debut getting caught in that triangle in the very last second, he was just moments away from becoming 11-0 and 1-0 in the UFC. I still think he has a high ceiling, and I think he wins this fight by knockout.
Yeah, I picked him as well. I like him via decision, however.
Cool. I think the most interesting guy that'll be on Octagon Jitters this week is Adam Yandiev. Adam Yandiev is an M1 standout who has faced a little bit of adversity. He hasn't fought since 2015 because of a couple of outstanding issues, and I won't ruin it now. I'll let you read and find out then. One of them had to do with, though, him. He was shot and had to kind of rehabilitate himself back into getting in fight shape. Originally supposed to face number 15 middleweight Christoph Jaco, but instead gets Jordan Johnson, who was a light heavyweight, dropping down to 185 on short notice. So there's a lot of interesting moving parts here, but I think Jordan Johnson does what he does best and out-wrestles Yandiev to a decision.
Yeah, I completely agree. I have Johnson unanimous decision.
And Ramazan Emiev takes on Stefan Sekulic, another short notice guy. I watched film on Sekulic. It definitely showed me nothing in way of the fact that he's going to beat Ramazan Emiev. I will say, though, Sekulic should be 13-1 instead of 12-2. He was dominating an entire fight against some Italian until he had an Anderson Silva moment and had a really brutal breaking of his leg.
Ooh, man.
Yeah, it was bad. It was like just as noticeable too. It's like one of those where you're like, "Oh shit."
Yeah, those are tough to watch.
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible. Emmy by decision for me though.
Yeah, I've got to take Emmy as well. Yeah, I'm going to say decision as well. I think the undercard is going to be just loaded with decisions, to be completely honest with you. None of these I'm looking at the prelims right now, and it's just I don't see a lot of finishes.
I think one fight that could materialize a finish is Merab Dvalishvili and Tyrion Ware that opens up the card. I think Merab Dvalishvili and Tyrion Ware both have their backs against the wall. With a combined record of 0-5 in the UFC. But, I mean, Tyrion Ware's fought Cody Stamann, Sean O'Malley, and Tom Dukunois. And Dvalishvili has fought, I believe, Frankie Saenz and Ricky Simone. So no easy test for either of those guys at bantamweight. But I do think Merab Dvalishvili gets that first UFC win. And Tyrion Ware might get his walking papers.
I actually like Tyrion Ware. Split decision. I think it's going to be really close. I think it could go either way. But I don't know. I like Tyrion Ware. I think he's really fun to watch. I really enjoy watching him fight.
He's got a granite chin.
Oh yeah, big time. His fight with the Contender Series guy there, Sean O'Malley. Yeah, his fight with Sean O'Malley was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. And not just because of all the crazy stuff that O'Malley does, but I thought Tarian Ware was a great dance partner for him.
Yeah, man, I agree. And that brings us to the conclusion of this podcast. My friend, we had a little bit of issues getting started earlier, but I'd like to thank you. You were a fantastic second half to this podcast that wouldn't have been possible without a co-host. And thanks a lot for joining me, my man.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on. And anytime you want me to come back on to talk MMA or football, I'm up for it.
So I have to have you on for football next, bro. What do you think?
Definitely. Absolutely. Preferably NFL, but I can even do college. Whatever.
We can do the NFL all day, my man. I'd like to thank you again for joining me, and I'll see you soon, brother.
All right. That sounds awesome. I'll talk to you later, Davidson.
Yes, sir, my man. Have a good one.
All right. You too, man. Later.